Good evening. I'm William McLean, Chair of the Department of Political Science, and it's my pleasure to welcome you to tonight's debate forum dedicated to the election campaign in Arkansas's 1st Congressional District. The program is sponsored jointly by the Department of Political Science, ASU-TV, KASU, the Jonesboro Sun, and the Department of Radio and Television. During tonight's 90-minute program, a panel of journalists will question all four political candidates competing for the right to represent the people of the 1st Congressional District in the United States Congress. Our 90-minute program is being broadcast live on ASU TV Channel 18, KASU Radio, KIT8.2, and comes to you from the ASU TV studio on the campus of Arkansas State University. This program is also being taped for rebroadcast at a later time and will be made available to other area cable networks and streamed live worldwide via the internet at KASU.org. The debate was made possible through considerable efforts of ASU Political Science Professor Dr. Richard Wang, Professor of Radio TV Dr. Mary Jackson Pitts, KASU Station Manager and Instructor of Radio TV Michael Doyle, and KASU Producer, Writer, and Editor Mark Smith. Joining us are our candidates, Rick Crawford, representing the Republican Party, Scott Ellington, representing the Democratic Party, Jacob Holloway, representing the Green Party, and Jessica Paxton, representing the Libertarian Party. Studio audience, please welcome the candidates. Now let's meet our panel of distinguished journalists. Joining us tonight, we have Chris Wessel, editor of the Jonesboro Sun, Mark Smith, producer, writer, and editor for KASU, Caleb Phillips, ASU Radio TV and a broadcast journalism major, and finally, Lindsay Blakely, editor, the Herald, and journalism pre-law major. Studio audience, please welcome the members of our panel. This will be the last time you hear from our studio audience, as they have agreed to remain silent until the conclusion of the program. Now let's get started. Each candidate will be allowed to make a two-minute opening statement. The order in which the candidates will speak was determined by a drawing which took place moments ago. After the opening remarks, we will go directly to the panel, whose members will ask questions to the candidates in accordance with the protocol which was agreed upon in advance. Our timekeeper tonight is Brandon Fry, a student in the Department of Political Science program. At the end of the debate, each candidate will be allowed a two-minute closing statement. So we'll let the opening remarks begin with candidate Holloway.
My name is Jacob Holloway. I'm the Green Party candidate for the 1st Congressional District. I'm 24 years old. I'm an Arkansas State University student in graduate studies of agricultural science. And I mean, honestly, I really shouldn't even be running for the United States Congress. I mean, I don't really need to be up here right now, but I am. And why is it? It's because the leaders in our country have failed the people, and they failed me, and they failed everybody in this room. And a lot of our politicians are lying to us. And there's a lot of complicated, interesting issues that are out there right now that are not being brought up into the mainstream media, are not being talked about by our politicians. And that's why it's more important than ever for third-party candidates to be running in these elections. And so the Green Party encouraged me to run. I felt like this was a great opportunity to be able to talk about some important issues that are important to me and to everybody else. And I'm not any different than anyone else that goes to ASU, as much as that I'm very passionate about the problems that are happening in our country. And I think people really need to think about what's going on. And I want to be here to give some analysis about what's going on, try and break down some of these issues, and really give a chance to explain something that a politician might give you a soundbite to. But I'm going to try and tell you the truth, because I'm not getting campaign donations from multinational corporations. I'm here taking my own time to come out here, put my personal life on the line, and come out and talk about issues that are important to everybody.
Thank you to the panelists, and thank you to the folks that have come out. It's always great to be back on the campus of ASU. I'm an ASU graduate, and it's always fun to come back and take part in extracurricular activities on the campus of Arkansas State University. Also want to say thank you to the folks that are watching at home or watching online. We appreciate that, and all the sponsors that have come together to make this happen. Want to acknowledge my wife, Stacy, who's with me tonight, and say hello to my kids at home with the babysitter. We're going to hear a lot of talk tonight about a lot of issues that are of great importance to our country.
And the one thing that I think we really need to focus on that trumps all the other issues, and it was summed up in a very simple statement by the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff under President Obama. About 2 years ago, he was asked, what is the single biggest threat to our national security? And without hesitation, he answered. And he didn't say nuclear Iran. He didn't say Al-Qaeda. He didn't say Russia. He didn't say China. He said, it's our debt. Our debt is the single biggest threat to our national security. And to put that in context, everyone in this room right now at this moment owes at least $50,000 as their share of that debt, growing at $16+ trillion and counting. And that means every child that's born tonight during this debate is born $50,000 in debt. And that's the debt that we know about. That's not even counting the unfunded liabilities, which would run that up to about $243,000. So if we're not talking about debt and the ramifications of our national policies, then we're really wasting our time. Policy has to be focused on how we get our arms around our national debt. And I thank you for the opportunity to serve as your congressman.
Mr. Ellington.
Thank you. Thank you, ASU, Arkansas State, KASU, the Jonesboro Sun, KAIT, the Political Science Department. I am Scott Ellington. I'm your prosecuting attorney for the 2nd Judicial District. I'm often asked, why are you running for Congress? And I'll tell you. Ladies and gentlemen, I have the second largest judicial district in the state. We file 7,000 felony cases in this district every year. I understand the importance of a negotiation, sitting across the table from someone I disagree with and working out an agreement, a compromise, a resolution. That's not going on in Washington, D.C. right now. You have the Democrats on one side, you have the Republicans on another, and either party would just as soon the country go off a fiscal cliff as to get along and work together and negotiate a resolution that's in the best interest of our country. I've made tough decisions as a prosecutor. I'll make tough decisions again. I'm willing to stand up and voice the concerns of the people of the 2nd Judicial District and the 1st Congressional District as well. The whole area, this part of the state, the 30 counties that we represent. I'm here tonight to ask you for your consideration and your vote. Listen to the comments of each of the candidates and make your decision as we move forward.
Ms. Paxton.
Hi, I'm Jessica Paxton. I'm your Libertarian candidate for U.S. Congress. I'd like to thank ASU and everyone for having us here this evening. First, I'm going to tell you a little bit about myself. My husband Roger and I live in Marion. I am a work-at-home homeschooling mom to two beautiful little boys. I grew up in a one red light rural community in Tennessee, and then I moved to Memphis to attend the University of Memphis, the journalism school there. And I wasn't particularly interested in politics at that time in my life, and that's probably because I felt like neither of the two major parties represented me. And then once I found the Libertarian Party and realized that I was not politically homeless, I jumped in with both feet. And over the last few months, I've found that a lot of people misunderstand libertarianism. And I've also found that a lot of people are libertarians, even though they may not realize that. Libertarians stand for freedom. The freedom for you to spend your money the way you choose. The freedom to live your life and not have others make decisions for you. Libertarians believe that you have rights because you're human and not because the government gives them to you, and therefore they cannot take them away. I believe in letting people live in peace, as long as they are not infringing on the rights of others. I also believe that I'm the only candidate here this evening that's going to tell you exactly what I believe, whether or not you will like to hear it. I'm not going to twist words or spin things to make them sound good. I'm going to tell you exactly what I think. I'm not here to make decisions for you and your family. I want you to have the freedom to make those decisions. And libertarians are nothing if not consistent, and so you're always going to know where I stand. This is exactly how I would legislate in Washington. If a bill came across my desk that expanded the size of government or took money out of your pocket, I would oppose it. That's pretty simple, right? If a bill came across that granted you more personal freedom and reduced the size of government, I would fight for that every single day. So you'll always know where I stand. Thank you.
Thank you to the candidates. Now we'll begin. Mr. Wessel will ask the first question. Candidate Holloway, and each candidate will have a chance to address Mr. Wessel's question. Then Mr. Holloway will have a chance for a one-minute rebuttal of that question.
Hi, Mr. Holloway. The Congressional Budget Office estimates the 2012 Farm Bill will cost $969 billion over a decade. Nearly $770 billion will be appropriated to the food stamp program. The food stamp program has grown from $30.8 million in October of 2008 to $46 million last October. The program has helped 45 million Americans in 2011. Do these numbers alarm you? And how should Congress go about slowing this trend?
Thank you for your question, Chris. First off, we're talking about bloated spending here. The Farm Bill is probably one of the biggest shams brought upon the American farmer and the farmers in Arkansas. The Farm Bill is the cause for the destruction of the small farms in America. When you pick winners and losers in the market and you see the kind of farm consolidation that is happening in our country, and look at the communities, look at Wiener, Arkansas, look at, Tilton, look at Hickory Ridge, look at Cotton Plant. You go through Desark. These places are drying up. There used to be vibrant communities in the Arkansas Delta, and that's because we had family farms. All the family farms are gone now, and all of our food is no longer made locally. We make a lot of commodity crops, but not many of these crops are actually consumed by Arkansans. We have a lot of crops being shipped back and forth, and one of the things that's really important is we get back to local food production. And yes, that number is alarming because, you look at it's covering up a problem that it's just a symptom, and it's not the real problem. And the real problem is people don't have access to nutritional food. Nutritional, healthy food is not affordable in America, but you can go down and buy a soda pop, or you can go down and buy a candy bar for, a dollar. And so we've incentivized people to eat bad food, and the government policy is behind that. So the food stamps has helped it reinforce that. People need to be able to know how to grow their own food. We need more 4-H programs in our school. We need kids to know how to grow their own food. And this is just general education that should be in the classroom. This is something that everyone should know. People should be closer to the food that they eat. People don't even know that eggs come from chickens or that milk come from cows. That's the real problem.
Thank you, Mr. Wessel, for the question. I think if I remember right, the thrust of the question had to do with nutrition title, food stamps, and the numbers that you cited there, $700 billion over a 10-year period. That's exactly right, and that's really at the heart of the debate with respect to the Farm Bill, if you want to know the truth of it. Everything else that we were able to accomplish in the House Farm Bill markup in House Ag Committee was done really in a great bipartisan fashion. Where we had a disconnect was with the nutrition title. And what we voted on and what was ultimately passed, and I thought a very responsible measure, was a roughly 2% cut over a 10-year period. That's roughly about $16.5 billion over that 10-year period. Now, to some, they thought that was too much, and some didn't think it was enough. But I think what we did was strike a balance and really found the sweet spot with respect to trying to bring a bipartisan vote in committee, which we did, 35-11, to really address those concerns. And how we went about that was, I think, very responsible. It was by addressing the eligibility requirements and closing some loopholes. And the truth of the matter is, we have a budget situation driven by our debt that's going to require us to make better use of scarce resources. And so what we did was did a reconciliation that recognized where we could address some of these loopholes that are exploited, and particularly in large urban areas. But the state of Arkansas does a great job managing these federal programs. And so the state of Arkansas was virtually unaffected by that, and that is a credit to the work that they do here in administering the nutrition programs from the federal government. So I believe that while cuts were necessary, responsibility and reasoned approach was the way it was taken care of in the House Ag Committee on a bipartisan basis.
Mr. Wessel, I'll tell you, what concerns me more than anything is that we don't have a farm bill yet, and it concerns a lot of farmers. We need the stability and the assurity of knowing what provisions are in the farm bill and what will go forward. You understand cutting the nutrition programs of the farm bill at this time. We have unemployment is still at a high number, and we have folks coming in, young ladies being left laid off from their jobs at a quick shop, or you have soldiers coming from overseas, and they can't find a job right now. And so nutrition is a very important time, and it's a sign of the times that we have to feed their children. So I believe that it's just a symptom, or it's a symptom of what our whole country is suffering with, but it's not one of those things that we can't just automatically go in and cut. I think, though, that there may be some ratcheting down of the qualifications for food stamps and ratcheting down some of the qualifications for these programs, but also consider that nutrition is also your school-free lunch, your school-free breakfast, and those programs as well. And we don't want children to go hungry in this country at this time or ever. And certainly we want to care for them. And so I think that being overly cautious and letting a nutrition provision of the farm bill to stand in the way of completing a farm bill is very concerning. And truthfully, if you look at it right now, I think that the farm bill was actually postponed till after the election because they're going to make even more drastic cuts to it than we even see right now. And if folks think that this farm bill looks bad now with the Midwestern flavor, just wait till after the lame duck Congress takes over and see what happens, because I believe there'll be even more cuts, and it's very concerning to me. If I have a chance to get elected and the folks elect me to Congress, I'll elbow my way to the front of the line to get on the Ag Committee to try to see that a farm bill is in place for the farmers of Arkansas that keeps them in mind in the provisions that we have. And that's the most important, I think.
From my understanding, the cost of this farm bill over 10 years is almost $1 trillion. And almost 80% of that will go to food stamps. So I'm going to call a spade and call this the food stamp bill. And people need to be fed. And if we have compassion, we'll help them. But you don't get moral credit for doing that at gunpoint. If we weren't taxed to death, we would have money to give to charities to help these people in need. I think that that's the job of our friends, our family, our neighbors, our church members. It's not the government's place to rob Peter to pay Paul. I think that we as citizens should be responsible for that. But if we're going to get into the agriculture discussion, something that we weren't able to bring up in our past debate on Tuesday, if we want to help farmers in Arkansas, let's look at legalizing industrial hemp. Now, I know that there are a lot of misconceptions about that. Marijuana and hemp are distant cousins. They are no relation. Hemp actually has CBD, and that blocks the effects of THC. So if you're going to talk about hemp, think of it as the anti-marijuana. Hemp can be used in fiber, in paper, in plastics. It has uses for biofuels, and we're not allowing our farmers to grow that. And as Mr. Holloway spoke earlier, we need to diversify and give our farmers some more options. So I'm not sure why we're not talking about this, but that's something that I would like to do when I get to Congress is lift the ban.
Mr. Holloway, you have 1 minute.
And that's wonderful, Jessica, and I want to follow up on kind of what we were talking about. I mean, three things that the Farm Bill really needs is training. We need to train more ag educators. People need to know about what farming is and how that they can be involved in farming. We need more education, but I want consumers to decide what the market's going to produce, not the government. And you're going to see lower prices because of that. And we need more small farms. That's a big jobs bill. Let's put people to work farming, because we need good food in this country. But I mean, we need innovation. And we're talking about innovation. Why don't we let Arkansas farmers farm hemp? Hemp's a food. You can eat it. You can make houses out of it. You can make clothes out of it. Way better than cotton. Cotton's destroying all of our soil in Arkansas. Why don't we replace it with a better crop? And hemp's going to be that crop. And it's illegal what the United States is doing. And we're holding farmers at gunpoint hostage from one of the biggest cash crops that the United States could be producing. Every country in the world is producing hemp right now except for the United States.
Mr. Smith will now direct the second question, starting with Congressman Crawford.
Congressman Crawford, you've been vocal about your support of a balanced budget amendment. In fact, you've been
willing to support it enough to also support increased taxes on high-income Americans in exchange for passage of the amendment. How would such an amendment be enforced? Would it fall to the courts and judges to make decisions involving economic and political policy?
Well, you know, balanced budget amendment is just that. It's an amendment to the Constitution. And I think if we're talking about the issues that face our country today, whether it be an increase in the debt ceiling, whether we're talking about taxes, whether we're talking about increased spending, if we're doing it outside the context of a balanced budget amendment, a spending limitation amendment, or some sort of permanent spending control, I think we're making a huge mistake. And I want to point to a couple of pieces of legislation that have actually been good pieces of legislation in the past, Graham-Rudman being one, PAYGO being another. These are statutory measures that are easily sidestepped as leadership changes in Congress and as we start to see turnover. And so what we want to say is no to future Congresses. It's not about the 112th Congress. It's about future Congresses. It's about the continued generational theft that's taking place here, where we have everyone in this audience, as I indicated before, that's at a minimum of $50,000 in debt. How are we going to stop that? And to me, the only way we're going to stop that is if we take this idea of debt seriously and don't continue to engage in this profligate spending and making sure we bind the hands of future Congresses. And quite frankly, the only way I think we're going to do that is through a constitutional amendment that forces that behavior out of Congress.
I think the question that you ask is how would it be enforced? And it appears to me that every budget that came forth would be subject to having a federal lawsuit filed and having the courts decide if every budget is constitutional or not. If you have to answer your question specifically, and to answer your question more particularly with regard to the balanced budget amendment, you know, there's no businessman in this town, there's no businessman in this state that would want to be told that he can't go to the bank and borrow money if he needs to borrow money to complete a year. Now, I don't think that the problem is the requirements of having a balanced budget amendment or not being able to borrow money. I think that the problem is not making appropriate decisions along the way and continually allowing the borrowing of money. It's stewardship on the part of the legislators. It's not by requirement of Congress. And I think that if the Congress will work together and hold down the spending and rein it in. You see, when Bill Clinton was president, we had a budget surplus because the Congress and the president worked together and brought the budget within working parameters, and there wasn't a problem with that. So I don't think that there's a necessity to have a balanced budget amendment at this time, as much as it is just to rein in the spending and have some actual self-control on the part of Congress.
To be clear, I absolutely support a balanced budget amendment as long as the budget is balanced from spending cuts and not from raising taxes. I think that I agree that our spending is out of control, and I think that we need to start slashing spending, cutting programs, looking at this really hard. It's scary to think. I have children who are 4 and 6, and it's so scary to think that they're going to be carrying this multi-trillion dollar debt around for the rest of their lives and their children's lives. So we've got to get spending under control. We've got to cut some of these unconstitutional programs and these programs that are inefficient. We've got to stop printing money, worthless money that's not backed by anything. I would love to see us get back to a gold standard so that our money is no longer worthless. For every dollar our government spends, we're borrowing 43 cents. Could your family survive like that? Could your business survive borrowing 43 cents on every dollar? You couldn't, and neither is our government. So absolutely would support a balanced budget amendment. Again, as long as we're balancing our budget from spending cuts and not from raising taxes.
You know, talking about the national debt's a great issue. I mean, this is something that's just overshadowing a lot of people my age. And, you know, look at back in 1964 when they started taking silver out of our currency. And one quarter would buy you a gallon of gas. Well, that same silver quarter will now buy you 2 gallons of gas. That's $6. And so you can see the kind of price inflation, the kind of inflation that our currency is come under right now. So you wonder why prices are going up. Well, the dollar, the value of the dollar is actually going down. I mean, this is a symptom of private currency printing, which that should be in the hands of Congress and the United States Treasury, not the Federal Reserve Bank, which a lot of Americans now are waking up to the fact that the Federal Reserve Bank is a private institution, an entity that has nothing to do with the federal government. But, I mean, we want to talk about, where a lot of our national debt is going. Hey, you know, balanced budget, that sounds great, but, like, where are all the deficits coming from? Well, hey, you know, when you're occupying about three or four countries around the world and you have half your military deployed, I mean, that costs a lot. And you got to build aircraft carriers for that and all kinds of equipment and personnel. I mean, if the American people really want to get behind these wars, then let's have a war tax. Let's have everybody in the United States pay their fair share and get behind these wars. Because I don't believe that the American people would be for so many foreign interventions if every time we had to go to war that we had to have a domestic war tax and really get behind these kind of interventions, because that's what's running up the national debt. Now, there's all kinds of things, all kinds of wasteful government spending, but you look at these DOD contracts that are being, no big contracts that are being put out there. I mean, these are in the billions and billions of dollars. You know, and then they talk about they want to cut military personnel. Cut military personnel. Like, that's going to solve our debt crisis? I mean, we need to rein in these no-bid contracts, and we need a sound money system, like Jessica said, going back to a precious metal standard.
Congressman Crawford, you have 1 minute.
I think Mr. Ellington really touched on the heart of the problem. He said that any businessman in Jonesboro ought to be able to go to the bank and borrow money. And they're exactly right, but they're borrowing money on their own account. But are we going to borrow another $12 trillion to cover the unexpected additional costs of Obamacare? According to that statement, that's what he wouldn't want to do. An additional $12 trillion to cover more entitlement program spending. That's our problem in Washington right now. We can't continue to borrow money and think that's okay. We're not talking about the private sector. If I want to go out and borrow money to start a business, that's great. That's the free market and private sector at work. But when we're talking about dealing with taxpayer dollars that ultimately would lead to doubling or potentially even tripling our current taxes in our lifetime, I say we've got to stop that. And if it takes a balanced budget amendment or a spending limitation amendment to do it, that's the route I think we need to take.